of the work session of the Nevada County Board of Supervisors. So the call order, all that pledge allegiance from the silence. Thank you. Welcome to the Minister's Report, Mr. Nichols.
Just a couple of things, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Board. In front of you, you've got this sheet with the green column dot.
Yes.
That's number-wise identical to the one in your budget binders, but this is the one that's in the presentation order tonight, in case you don't make any notes about the various presentations we go. So it's just an extra copy of the presentation order. And then the ones at the bottom are not intended to present tonight, so it's listed there. But it's the same number total as in the binders. Just a couple quick announcements. Other announcements. The Planning Commission is meeting in the Morris Room tonight at 7 o'clock, so if people are here for the Planning Commission meeting, it's actually across the way in the administration building at 7 p.m. tonight. And then for the board, on March 6th, we've got a regular meeting and a work session. The regular meeting's at 2 o'clock. I've moved the constitutional officer budget briefs to the 2 o'clock meeting because in the evening session, my recommendation is to change that to 7 o'clock. There's a two public hearings that night that I actually wasn't aware of. I thought they were the 2 o'clock meeting. They got changed to 7 o'clock because they were advertised that way. So we'll hold those public hearings in the evening at 7. So you've got a couple choices. You can either have the first hour, since it was planned at 6, as kind of a general work session. But if you just change it to 7, you can do the public hearings, and then we have a joint work session with the Louisa County Board of Supervisors that evening as well. So you've got two choices. Either leave it at 6, you've got an hour to do a little bit of work, or 7. The public hearings start at 7, and you've got two short public hearings and then followed by the work session. So we'll have some dinner in between the two meetings, and then you can just come back over here. And so I'll leave it advertised at 6, but with the public hearings at 7. And that way you can just do general work session if you choose that. Okay. Any questions I can answer before we move on?
Any questions for the county administrator? Thank you, Mr. Nichols. We'll go ahead and move on to the presentations. Please keep in mind these normally do not exceed 5 minutes, so please keep on keeping as brief as possible. Can I kick off with Susan?
It's the right button on that.
The right button, thank you. Good evening. Thank you very much for allowing me to reschedule my presentation for this evening. My back also thanks you. Often we're asked at social services, what exactly do you do over there? And to put it simply, what we do is we are the contact point for citizens' well-being and protective services in the county. And I've talked about that over the years with you, and we'd be glad to answer any questions you may have about those tonight. However, tonight I would like to focus on a fiscal year 12 report that shows the dollars that come into the county to our citizens that are over $15 million annually. There are two program categories that I'll go over. One is budget dollars that flow through the county budget, and the second one are dollars for services which do not flow through the county budget. The first slide shows the benefit and service payments to Flavanna citizens. These are the dollars which do go through the county budget, and they come to over $500,000. The pie charts in the next couple slides, I've used blue for local dollars and green for the federal and state dollars. And for full disclosure, I hope you find the blue to be a soothing color and find the green to be a very happy color because they're not coming out of your budget lines. And out of this $500,000, the programs are adult and adult protective services, adoption, auxiliary grants, daycare, Family Preservation and Child Protective Services, General Relief, Foster Care, VIEW, and then there are several other grants that are part of that. And as you can see, of that amount, only 37% is local dollars. I believe so. The second category of programs are the benefit and service payments to the citizens which do not flow through the county budget lines. These are programs for which social services is responsible. We manage the cases, we determine eligibility, and do all the mandatory reporting to the state and federal government. And those programs are energy assistance, Medicaid, SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, TANF. And I will note that the last three, the Medicaid, SNAP, and TANF, in the last month have had a 100% increase in our applications. So the total that is brought to our citizens in these programs is almost $15 million. And the pie chart is all green. This is a pie chart that just combines the prior two. And when you put all that together, it shows that the total of the programs that are purchased and given to clients, 5% is local dollars. This isn't such a happy chart. This is our turnover chart for a little bit less than the last 4.5 years. We have had a turnover of 137% of our staff. And upon analysis of it and talking with people who have left, why they're leaving, doing exit interviews, we've determined that it's mainly due to the stress of the job and to the low salaries. And our board feels that it would be very helpful to add some staff to our contingent at this time. We did request 5.5 new positions in our budget request. I know that Mr. Nichols has made a recommendation regarding salaries, which will begin to help address the salary part of the issue. And I also believe that the General Assembly is expecting to have maybe up to 3% to help with salary increases for social services employees. But that depends on revenue projections and how that plays out. So according to our caseload standards, we are 5.5 people short, and that was back last October before we seemed to be having this new uptick in work. So we are requesting additional funding for these positions to aid our citizens and support the staff to reduce turnover. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next up on the agenda is MACO.
Okay. My name is Libby Edwards-Alba. I'm actually your Fluvanna County rep to the MACA board. So they sent me here to answer any questions that you would have about our presentation today. And we've given you copies. You should have, we don't have a PowerPoint, but we did send you a presentation, which kind of tells you a little bit about us and what we're doing here in the county. Now, our mission at MACA is to improve the lives of people with low income by helping them become self-reliant and enhancing, and thereby enhancing the economic vitality of the community as a whole. So we feel that by helping these people that need help, that it helps the entire community. In Fluvanna County, if you'll look in your packet, you can see that we have about 531 clients here in the county that we help every year. We do have a 5-county service area, Louisa, Fluvanna, Nelson, Charlottesville, and Alma County, but Fluvanna County is one of the biggest counties that we help as well. I have information in this packet about the different programs that we have. Specifically here in the county, we have the Head Start program that is now based in Central Elementary School that has a classroom there. We have the Project Discovery program, which helps low-income high school age students discover the college process, maybe their first generation college students, and it takes them to explore the opportunity of going to college, visit different colleges, and puts that thought in their head as to what college can do for them. And then we have our community outreach programs here in the county. We have other programs that we'd like to bring to the county. With funding help, our family self-sufficiency program, which allows us to do programs such as budgeting workshops, job training, things like that, would be something that would be greatly desired here in Fluvanna County. And basically, everything else should be here for you to look at or so as far as exactly what we do. Mendat Cook is the one fundraiser that we do. We actually put a save the date card there for you. We would love to see the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors in attendance. I actually, like I said, I'm your Fluvanna County rep, but I'm also the chairperson for the project this year. So if you have any interest, you can see Ms. Armstrong or myself, and we would like to see more Fluvanna County residents attend the event. It's a great event, April 6th at the Omni Hotel.
I brought cold pizza and beer.
We're good on the cooks. You can just come and get some pointers from the men who cook, yes.
Could you ask our board just to wash dishes instead of cooking?
Yes. Yes.
Popular
board? As usual, I have no comment. Yes, thank you for all the comments. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Good evening. I won't take 15 minutes. I'll take just get through this as quickly as possible. I'm Helen Cawthon, president of Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development. You may recall that last year at this time, I was brand new to my job, so I've now been here 1 year and certainly have learned a lot more about Fluvanna County in that time. It's been great to work with your group. I'll quickly go through some slides because I think they are helpful visuals. We are an 8-county plus City of Charlottesville regional partnership. We bring together UVA, Germana, and Piedmont Virginia Community Colleges and the private sector to work collaboratively on economic development. Steve Nichols is on our board of directors, along with other county administrators representing those jurisdictions, 12 private sector directors, and the rest. Bobby Popowitz is an active member of our Economic Development Partners team, and frankly, I've been very impressed with him. He's been great to work with. We've really enjoyed getting to know him. He came about a month after me, so I think we bonded because of that, too. Our investors, just to give you a list of those, you've got that in your packet if you'd like to take a look at it. Our program of work, we basically focus on four main areas, but one I wanted to highlight quickly is promoting Central Virginia as a premier location for business. In part, we're doing that focused on the Target Markets Report released last year, and I think we came over and gave you all a presentation about that. Two regional targets, and then Fluvanna has their own targets as well, their own chapter as part of that that Bobby has been working from. Benefits of regionalism, I think the collaborative approach, the public-private partnership and that collaborative approach is more efficient, it's more effective, and frankly, I think ultimately it'll show to be more successful. And we greatly appreciate Fluvanna County being a longtime partner. Our request this year is a little bit different than in the past. Since we were formed in 1995, we've asked for $12,500 per year. This year, the board actually approved a 50 cents per capita phased in over 3 years, so one-third of the increase in each year, with a $10,000 minimum. So your request for this year is $10,615. I also wanted to let you know that in part because of our counties that Thomas Jefferson isn't quite as meaningful for, including Steve Nichols and other board members. We did do a branding assessment this past year and have actually decided to change our name, change our brand, and develop some really exciting key messaging. So I wanted to be sure you all knew that we'll have Secretary Chang with us and Martin Briley from Virginia Economic Development Partnership on March 21st at 10 o'clock at the UVA Research Park, and we'd love to have you all there. You'll certainly get a formal invitation, but wanted you get it on your calendars if you'd like to join us. And otherwise, I just want to thank you so much for your investment, and I'd be glad to answer any questions. I can't tell you tonight in a public forum. Or I'd be happy to tell you privately, or I'd let Steve do that in confidence. But we are not announcing it officially to the media until that day.
Questions?
Thank you so much for your time tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Given our long Central Virginia Small Business Development Sector.
Hi, I'm Nora Gillespie from the Small Business Development Center, and I'm here tonight for a couple of reasons. One is to thank you for the support that you have given us in the past, to remind you that our funding had been discontinued by Flavanna County last year, as I understand, due to budget issues, and we're asking to be reinstated for fiscal year 14. And I'm also here to show you that we have continued to service the county and actually increased our servicing to some of the residents and businesses of Flavanna during this last fiscal year. I don't want to go through all the slides since I think you're all familiar with what we do. We do one-on-one counseling with small businesses. Existing businesses are our primary mission, and we do training. Half of our money comes from the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we service the Charlottesville and the surrounding six counties. Bobby Popowitz is on my advisory board and has been very helpful in helping us with the issues in Flavanna and how we can be of assistance. What I'd like to get to, since our time is limited, is to show you that most of our, almost all of our sponsors have increased us over the years. In fact, Albemarle County has recommended another increase for us this year. And Flavanna County is the only service area that we have that felt the need to discontinue funding us. We are part of the Thomas Jefferson Partnership, as you all know. All the jurisdictions serviced except Flavanna support us, and we have a variety of servicing organizations that do in-kind assistance with us. Okay, we are measured by impact. Over the past four calendar years, our clients have either created or retained jobs that are over 431 during that period. 37 new businesses were created. Sales increased $7.6 million, and we do a lot of work in capital formation and working with banks and other capital sources. And $12.6 million has been generated to our client base, and that's just based on a 20% response rates from our clients. Right now we're surveying for 2012. Where does Flavanna fit in all of that? As the funding has decreased to the center, we could not do as much outreach, and so at this point in time for calendar year 12, we assisted 3% of the clients we assisted came from Flavanna, and 8% of the training attendees were from Flavanna, and as you'll see in a slide in a minute, they've attended quite a few sessions. We've done one-on-one counseling, most of it long-term, with five Flavanna businesses, and then we've assisted others with just information. We led with the DBA, an Entrepreneur Express workshop here just last fall, where we had a good attendance. We asked the attendees at the end what they want, you know, what more did they want from the providers. 14 responded, said they needed assistance. 8 of those 14 wanted to come into the SBDC and indicated they'd be coming in for assistance. The key area for 2012 is our ICAP program, which is a technology counseling program. There were only four who were admitted into our program from our region. One was from Fluvanna County, which is a business, it's a high-growth technology business with IP. And we put this client was approved to get into the program, went through it successfully. The value of the services for that program per client are a minimum of $7,000. They get a current market assessment of their intellectual property and a roadmap counseling by subject matter experts. And then they get a roadmap of where they go next, and we can do long-term counseling with them as well. That is not just my time allocated. It's not my time at all, actually. It is third-party technology consultants that the SBDC actually pays for. To provide service to the clients of our area. So we felt that we certainly were not going to ignore Fluvanna County and its businesses, you know, in our key programs. During 2012, we had Fluvanna businesses attending all of our workshops. They were in How to Start a Business, Selling to the Government, The Entrepreneur Express, Sharing Success, which is for co-ops and nonprofits, which was new for us to do. Keeping the Books, which is to help businesses learn how to look at their financial statements and understand them so they can, you know, look to see if they're profitable and how to improve their business. And then we offer a QuickBooks hands-on class on actually how do you use QuickBooks, where we walk through them. It's an 8-hour session. Very popular. And so we've had a number of Fluvanna business owners attend that. On that note, I'll summarize. Good timing. On that note, I'll summarize and ask that you look to reinstate us if you can as you're looking at our budget. We would love to be able to say when we sit down with a client, the reason that we can bring you our services today is because Fluvanna County is a partner of ours and they want their businesses to be successful.
You don't have any federal or state money.
We have, the only federal money we have is $64,000 from the SBA, absolutely no money from Richmond, and the rest is coming from the local jurisdictions and CPA firms, banks. Yeah. Okay.
Any further questions? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Moving right along. Keep on working.
We need all the inside business.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Heather Four. I'm the program manager for the Piedmont Workforce Network. I also live here in Fluvanna at Lake Monticello, so I appreciate having the opportunity to be here this evening. The Workforce Investment Act is a federal law that was instated in 1998, and that's really why we exist. Part of the requirements of that law was that we develop a local workforce investment board. There's 15 of local workforce investment boards in the state of Virginia, designated by the governor. The Piedmont Workforce Network is made up of planning districts 9 and 10, so we have 11 localities that we cover in our region. One of our main responsibilities is the oversight of the one-stop delivery system in our area. We also have a fiscal and administrative relationship with the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development. We are co-located with them at this time. This is our organizational chart, just so you can kind of see a little bit of how we're structured. We have a council made up of local elected officials, then we have a managing board primarily made up of private sector representatives, and then we have different committees. The Virginia Workforce Center in Charlottesville is located on Hydraulic Road, and that is our comprehensive workforce center that services all of Planning District 10. We are seeing about 7% of our customers are Fluvanna County residents, and that's stayed pretty consistent over the last couple years. We do have one member of our team that is able to come out to Fluvanna County and see people by appointments, and the library has been very wonderful to work with us and allow us to see people at the library. She said that she's having appointments about twice a month where she's coming out here to see people. I was actually going to bring a success story with me, but she had class this evening at 6, so when the time got changed, she wasn't able to come with me, but I am just going to share her story with you. She lives in Fluvanna County, but she was working at Video Gaming Technologies in Rutgersville. And you probably heard that they closed and relocated in March. So when something like that happens, the Workforce Center is always there to help the people who are getting laid off with that transition. So we were able to help Jennifer learn about our services and help her as a result of this layoff. And so she has been able to enroll in a program that is going to help open up a lot more opportunities for her at its completion. Right now, Sean Kenny is our local elected rep on the council, and Chris Fairchild is our private sector rep on the board for Fluvanna County. I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
Any questions from
board supervisors? Okay. Thank you.
No, I'm not. Actually, Donna could not be here tonight, so I'll be filling in with the help of Karen Davis. My name is Brad Sheffield. Thank you for letting us come this evening to present. So.
I get to have the first slide.
Yes.
So we asked, when we put this presentation together, the first question we asked was, why have public transportation? And we took a quote right from the annual passenger survey that we do, and we got a lot of quotes like this from the Fluvanna passengers, and just let it run. There are a lot of people that don't have a ride. And basically, in a nutshell, you know, no matter how good the senior program might be, or the doctors that have availability of appointments, or work that's available, if a person can't get there, then there's no value to that. So they need transportation.
Karen can speak very passionately about the customers that we provide service to, and it takes two of us to actually fill Donna's shoes, to be quite honest. In the last 3.5 years, we have seen the decline in the ridership. This is directly related to the decrease in services that we've been providing. We've projected what our ridership is for FY13, but of course it's not close to what was being provided in FY12. Just a little bit of comparison and to give you an update of where we are with the current services. In FY12, we had 2 commuter routes. We had 3 days of inter-county services, 3 days of midday service, and a bunch of related school transportation programs, summer camp, school breaks, after-school transportation. When we made the funding changes in FY13, we had to reduce services to a 1 commuter route, 1.5 days of inter-county services, 1 day of midday service, and limiting the after-school transportation to just after school, eliminating the summer camps, school breaks, and so forth. And as a result of cutting our services, of course, we have people that we had to discontinue service to. I just wanted to kind of provide you with an overview of that, in the sense that it's not just seniors and disadvantaged individuals. We do have people who were seeking employment. We did have several students who were attending PVCC who were no longer to utilize Jaunt for that type of service. A lot of different people. And because of the way we had to cut service, the dissection of service, providing service on 1 day but not another, it really reduced a lot of the dependency of on Jaunt. So to kind of give you an idea of our budget request, we have 2 different parts to it. One is just give you an idea of, if we were to restore certain pieces of the service that were eliminated in the past, what that would cost, like restoring the service. So just 1 day of service, the door-to-door in Fluvanna, would cost about $2,300 additional dollars. And of course, this assumes fulfilling the request of the $72,141 for the FY14 budget. And I just wanted to note real quick that that's the local match that we're looking for. And if you remember my presentation to you last time, I was very fortunate to do that. There was a question about matching of state and federal dollars. And so that $2,300 actually creates $8,000 of actually funds that are used for your service. So I just want to kind of point that out, that your local funding is matched with the federal and state funding to provide the service. So the other part of our budget request is looking at what we've requested and what has been recommended. And looking at the $65,000 that level funding that has been recommended, we're going to have to face some hard cuts. Right now, we've come up with three different scenarios of that $7,000 difference between what we're requested and what may be approved. We're looking at possibly cutting a third out of the Fluvanna Express. This is one of our higher ridership services. Possibly just cutting out half a day of the remaining midday service. That's now only one day of service. And then also possibly looking, not and, but another alternative is looking at eliminating the door-to-door service in Fluvanna. So if you're looking at providing us a level funding of $65,000, we will have to try to consider some alternative to services reduction to meet that budget. But I do appreciate you letting me present our budget request to you, and I didn't take up the full 5 minutes. So I hope you have any questions, please let me know.
Any questions from the board?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving right along. Java, Steve.
Thank you for allowing me to present tonight. And I particularly want to thank some of our members who have come to be here to show their support. And so, thank you all.
Again, make sure that Ms. Soto knows that she was missed tonight. We asked about her, and we hope she has a speedy recovery.
Excellent, thank you. You know it would take something huge for her not to be here.
We're very glad to see everybody else.
Yeah, we don't want to shortchange anyone who did come. I wanted to start with two quotes that I just think set the stage. Aristotle said, "The way you can judge a nation is by the way it treats its most vulnerable citizens." And Pearl Buck said, "Our society must make it right and possible for old people not to fear the young or be deserted by them, for the test of a civilization is the way it cares for its helpless members." And I really appreciate the commitment that Fluvanna made last year to reinstating some funding, and this year the recommendations to increase that funding. As you have seen in fiscal year 12, we assisted 547 people, and this year we're projecting to serve 840 individuals. And I think that's a really significant number to be aware of, even with our decreased funding, that we've found ways to continue to reach out to people. A lot of that is through phone support, resource help, case management, a lot of ways that maybe aren't as visible because it's not at a community center, but it's the health insurance coaching that we do for people as they try and figure their way through the Medicare maze. And so the other point that I do want to make is, as you well know, your number of seniors is projected to continue to increase in your county. In 2010, you had 4,000 people over the age of 65. That was up 44% from the year 2000. In the year 2020, you're projected to have 6,400. And of that group, 19% right now live alone. I get the feeling a couple of you are reflecting on it. And 7% live below the poverty line, and poverty being judged by the government as $10,289 for one person, $12,982 for two. If you think about that, since we just said that 19% live alone, that means they're making less than or grossing less than $1,000 a month. So you can see why the ability for JABA to provide those services for them is really important. I think one other just good statistic to keep in mind is that our average client is a 77-year-old African-American woman who has a 33% probability of living alone and a 35% chance of living in poverty. And so, again, as you think about the quote about those who need the most help, that's what this is about. Just as a reminder, there are many services that we provide in Fluvanna County. We have some of your residents who go up to Charlottesville for the Adult Care Center, which allows caregivers to be able to either have some respite or more likely to be able to go to work so that they can continue to pay taxes. We do case management. We have the community center, which I know you're all aware of. With that is home-delivered meals. When you look at your budget, they're grouped in together, and although there are so many positive things in the budget, I just wanted to point out that the home-delivered meals are about a third of that budget package of $47,000. So when the decision was made to stay with one day a week of the community center, by cutting it in half, it actually cut the home-delivered meals in half as well. So I would really ask if you can reconsider that, if you could pull one-third off the top to keep all of the home-delivered meals, and then look at the other two-thirds and splitting that for the community center. We are working with Parks and Rec to try and find some creative ways, collaborative ways, to provide a second day. As you heard last year, our seniors really appreciate having 2 days, and I think there's a way for us to create a program that would take full advantage of county resources with the support of JABA so that we can continue to meet some needs, but try to do it in a way that shows sensitivity to the budget constraints that you have as a county. We do, as I mentioned, health insurance counseling. We have health services and nurses here every week when we have the community center, and the case manager is here. Information and assistance, and our volunteer program, which we love working at Central Elementary School, doing some intergenerational programming. I just wanted to take a second and say, why do we want to finance these services, especially as we all have to make tough decisions? I think the value and worth of seniors in the community, this sends an important message. Many seniors own their own homes and pay personal property tax. Seniors spend in the community, and seniors are at risk for health and nutrition deficiencies that are preventable, and the knowledge they learn can be shared with their extended families. So it becomes something that is not just helping seniors, it's helping all ages within your community. Caregivers are able to work knowing that their loved one is being taken care of in a safe environment, as well as experiencing the socialization and cognitive activities. And also, caregivers can work and maintain their other life roles and remain healthy, contributing members of the county, which of course includes paying taxes. I just want to say we don't work alone. As you heard Jaunt reference, they're a big part of our seniors being able to get to the community center on the day of JABA. Parks and Rec has always been a huge supporter, and Central Elementary School is near and dear to all of our hearts, as well as many other places where we're able to volunteer or get volunteers from. And lastly, I just want to point out on this slide, the yellow part, local government, is 19%. When you all contribute this last year, that's how much of the cost of these services was paid by Fluvanna. And I think that's a really important number. That's a little low compared to other jurisdictions. Most of them pay somewhere between 25 and 26%. So we know that jurisdictions are limited in what they can do, but as you can well imagine, we fully expect the federal and state dollars are going to continue to decrease as well. And so as we look to increase fundraising and grants, we also just want to ask anything you can do to continue to show your support. We really appreciate it. Any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you.
I think your Aristotle part is wrong there. I think it's a paraphrase from
Dostoevsky. Well, I found quite a few paraphrases, but I figured Aristotle wasn't quite as politically leaning as some of the other ones I found.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your presentation. Moving right along, people on housing lines.
Hi. Thank you for having us. I'm going to do this really quick. We're a regional nonprofit.
We provide services to first-time home buyers. We provide services to people that are in default foreclosure situations. We provide rental housing counseling, and then we have additional programs besides doing education and outreach. And again, I'm not going to go through the slides, but we are a one-stop shop. We have down payment assistance dollars that we have written grants for and things like that that helps people get into their houses. I added some additional slides in here for purposes that the board could see how you fare compared to the other counties as far as intakes for home ownership or default foreclosure prevention programs. And it looks over a three-year period. I talked to you briefly last year about the VITA program. It is now up and running. The state has got approval to initiate that. Piedmont Housing Alliance is the intermediary for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District. And so that is a savings match program for people that are looking to go back to school, start a business, or use funds that they have saved with the match for a down payment to help buy their house. One of the other things is there's some interesting facts on these slides about the default foreclosure program that we have. And again, I won't go through them, but I will share one really important one. This is the outlook on the preservation of the tax assessments. And these are based on, we have a staff of four housing counselors, and I'm including myself as a housing counselor. And you can see these are the houses that did not foreclose in the counties and also the city of Charlottesville. So I just wanted to share some of that information to you. We shared it with our board on our annual report, and most of the time, the counties that we work with do not know the impacts of the services that we provide. All of our services are free. Credit reports, the one-on-one counseling, we do meet clients in Fluvanna. They do not have to go to Charlottesville. And let me see. There's our contact information. Is there any questions? We appreciate the support.
Any questions before? Okay. Go back to the site with the individual account.
Okay, is that going to be left? Which one?
It was individual accounts.
The VITA program?
Yes, ma'am. That's it.
Yep, there it is. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
It's federal law, given the state that administers. Is there a local match to that that makes that?
No.
No. So.
It's federal dollars. It comes through the Department of Housing and Community Development, DHCD, in the state. And what it is, there's been numerous studies over the years that find that the lack of financial literacy and education of people, how they save their money, how they manage their money, and if they're trying to work towards a goal, they can get educated, get a better habit of saving dollars, because it's a two-year savings program. So there's requirements of attending classes and saving. They have to make a deposit. So at our level, I approve the applicants. The state opens up the account. They come in every month. They attend classes, and they're making those deposits. And we, you know, come up with a goal plan for them to achieve the goal. People are only getting approved if they can achieve that goal within that two-year period. If not, they'll sit back. We are partnered with the CIC program for people, you know, thinking about starting a business. They would start with us pretty much if they qualify, because it is income derived. Okay? It's a 2-to-1 ratio. The participant or the saver saves $2,000. The program will match that was $4,000. So they have a total of $6,000 after 6 months or up to 2 years that they can access to use one of it for home ownership, starting a business, or education. Okay?
Bad habit, good habit.
It's a good habit.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Moving on, Thomas Jefferson Emergency Medical Services Council. Okay, moving on. Legal Aid and Justice Center, Kathleen Bogle.
Hi.
First, I'd like to thank you for the support that you've given us in the past and the opportunity to speak with you again this evening. As you know, we are a law firm, a nonprofit law firm that provides free legal services in civil matters to low-income individuals in the Planning 10 District, Region 10 Planning District, Fluvanna, Louisa, Nelson Green, Charlottesville, and Albemarle. We do a lot of things. We have a number of different programs, but what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about tonight and in just a few minutes that you have for us is the sort of value proposition of the dollars you spend versus the dollars we bring back into the community with just a number of the civil cases that we handle. Excuse me, it's allergy season. One way in which we keep dollars in the community is by representing people who are threatened with unjust or illegal claims. For example, one Fluvanna tenant was protected from a $5,000 judgment sought by a landlord making claims that were unreasonable and unjust and not consistent with the law. For another Fluvanna resident, we obtained a negotiated settlement. This fellow was the victim of a car title lender who used illegal practices in extorting the money from this gentleman. We were able to put $1,500 into his pocket based on our representation of that gentleman. We've obtained, this is all within calendar year 2012, we obtained $3,500 in unpaid wages by suing employers who violated the Fair Labor Standards and Practices Act, mostly either failing altogether to pay wages or not paying appropriate wages under the act. We've represented one Fluvanna homeowner, and the impact for this particular homeowner was especially great. We worked in collaboration with the Fluvanna Louisa Housing Foundation and represented this woman in court, sued foreclosure rescue scammers, got judgments in excess of $130,000 against the foreclosure rescue scammers, were able with the cooperation of the other local agencies to get her a better mortgage interest rate, reduce mortgage principal, and save the equity in her home. And the total benefit to her was $270,000, $80,000 of which, or $84,000 of which, was money in her pocket based on our representation of this woman. We've been able to obtain $39,000 in unemployment insurance benefits for Fluvanna residents who lost their jobs in these tough economic times. We just earlier this week finished up a case, and this is in 2013, but this has been a case that's been going on for about 5 or 6 years, where an unscrupulous lender and foreclosure rescue scammers were trying to illegally evict your residents, a couple, from their home here in Fluvanna County. So we were able to prevent homelessness in that case. It was not a case where dollars in their pocket was an appropriate remedy, but they were saved from an unlawful eviction, and the bank and the foreclosure scammers were held to the law in keeping them there. We helped in cooperation with Susan Muir's Department of Social Services. We helped an elder woman who badly needed home care get Medicaid services to keep her in the community and in her home. When we look at the value of that, we look at state averages and think, well, it's about $600 a month would be the cost of providing equal insurance. Of course, for that client, it's priceless. There's no cost that can be put or price that can be put on keeping her in her home. In cooperation with Piedmont Housing Alliance, we worked with another family who was at risk of losing their home, avoided foreclosure. And finally, another Fluvanna homeowner at risk of foreclosure, we assisted with mortgage modification services and a sort of a tricky situation involving an estate to keep her from losing her home, preserving about $100,000 of equity for her. So if you add all of those values together, you're getting about 100-to-1 return on your investment in our civil legal services program. And we're not even talking about the other services we provide to Fluvanna County residents. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions?
No. Thank you very much.
Moving right along to OAR, Jefferson Area Community Corrections.
thank you for the opportunity to speak about OAR and the services we provide to Flavanna residents. I want to talk about three main services that Flavanna receives from our agency. One is pretrial services, one is probation services, and one is planning services. Pretrial is, I'm going to do these very simply. Pretrial, we go into the jail every day at 5:30 in the morning. We interview people for and do investigation to see if they are eligible for release. We make recommendations to the court. Then we also supervise the people that the court refers to us. That's pretrial in a nutshell. Local probation is, we receive all of our referrals directly from the courts, and I'm going to talk a little more in depth about that. And then planning is, we have a criminal justice planner who oversees the Community Criminal Justice Board, and that Flavanna has currently Sheriff Washington on that, and we have recently asked the Victim Witness Coordinator to join us on that board. So a little bit about local probation. That's the main. We're not asking for funding for pretrial because the jail currently provides us funding. So in 2011-12, local probation program had provided services to 54 new people, which is about 4% of our total clients, new people. The average time that those 54 people would have spent in jail was 30 days. And I think probably you all know that it's pretty expensive to keep people in jail. It's about $54 a day, approximately, according to the comp board. And if you added all of that up, it would be about $87,000 that it would cost if those people stayed in jail. We defray those costs by providing our services. Our costs are 65 cents a day for that service. Right now, we appreciate that the county administrator has recommended $1,750. We requested $5,800, and really that's just 6% of the total cost we save you. It's about 30% of what our request is, and that comes to about $32 a person, and that's just really not enough for us to provide the service. So I just want to highlight that this is a cost savings kind of program. Criminal justice planning, by the way, we have two offices, one in Orange and one in Charlottesville, but we are in Flavanna weekly providing services, and we have services in the courts. We also ask for funding for the criminal justice planner. We have, like I mentioned, this community criminal justice board, which Sheriff Washington is a part of, and we have one part-time staff person who coordinates the nine localities that are served by that. The National Institute of Corrections recently released an article about the importance of these coordinating boards. They highlighted three major elements. They said engaged membership, which Sheriff Washington certainly is, criminal justice planning staff, which we have, but not to the level we need, and structured data-guided collaboration among the policy team. We cannot do that without the staff. And at this point, Flavanna has not recommended anything. We requested $4,700, and at this point, there's a recommendation of zero. Five of the nine localities do fund the planner, and out of the and the local probation program, we have seven of the nine who fund. Flavanna and Green are the only two who have do not currently fund us in the current fiscal year. We appreciate that we are back in the budget recommended. We hope we will stay in there, and are asking you for a consideration of increasing that, and also consideration of giving funding for the criminal justice planner. That's kind of all I have to say, unless you have more. I do have both an article, the article about the criminal justice planner, and we are actually mentioned in here as one of the 12 that have been doing a good job and being part of it, and I also have our annual report. I will hand these to Mr. Nichols, and then I will let him hand them out to you. But if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions?
I thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much. Shelby, emergency to Sarah.
Good evening. Thank you so much for inviting us and for allowing us the space to talk to you this evening, and for your support in previous years. As you probably know, the Shelter for Help in Emergency provides victims of domestic violence services in Planning District 10. We provide a 24-hour hotline throughout the whole year. We provide a 24-hour safe shelter, confidential safe shelter for those that need that. And we also provide outreach and community services. So for victims and their families who don't either wish to come into the shelter or don't have the need to come into shelter, we can meet them in the community and provide those services there. In addition to the safe shelter, we provide counseling, legal advocacy in the courts, children's and teen programs, and case management and housing help services. Our aim is to help our families become self-sufficient and lead a safe and safe and peaceful life. In the last year, we provided 84 nights of shelter to victims from Flavanna County, and we gave services to 275 women and children from your county in our outreach and community services. So those were women and children who didn't come into the shelter. Most studies that have been done over the years have consistently shown that as many as one in four women will experience some kind of domestic violence in their lives, in their lifetime. And if those statistics are true, that would suggest that in Flavanna County you would be seeing something like 3,500 victims of domestic violence, given your population numbers. It's a drastically underreported crime and issue. Most victims of domestic violence don't come forward, so it's crucial that we're out there in the community. It's crucial that we're able to provide these services, and they do save lives. As we know, domestic violence can unfortunately be have tragic consequences and have done to many victims in this area. So we work to keep as many women and children as safe as we can and help them move on in their lives, and we really appreciate your support in doing that. Your funding represents 4% of our budget, and we see 5% of our clients come from Flavanna County. We're requesting a level funding for this year, although we would be more than delighted to accept any more that you want to give us. But we do appreciate that everybody is facing extremely tight times, and we would appreciate level funding. Thank you.
Any questions from the board? No, I'm just hearing all this quote, and I just kind of wonder how does anyone ever find out what the people do, what's the burden for getting people in touch with these things. It goes not only just for this program, but all these programs here. Do we have a simple question?
A couple things. The Social Services Board, in concert with the Interagency Council, put together it's a triangle that lists all the different kinds of agencies available. One of my goals is to make them a lot more visible on the website, but also then get it out to different places. It's updated pretty regularly, and it's a really good document, but it's the kind of thing that when we do those like community meetings that come up, some folks that maybe would come to those community meetings over the next 2 Mondays may not be in need of services. Maybe they don't make it to those kind of things. But some of the comes may know a neighbor that needs to know. And if we can hand those out at every opportunity we've got, make it visible on the website, I think we can expand maybe the visibility of the programs. There are a lot of programs for help out there, but making sure we connect people with is important. So that's at least the starting point.
I noticed one of the churches is having something in the next month that covers the aging. And they said they were having trouble in finding all the information that was needed to be presented to the community.
For all of you, anytime you have anyone that has questions about that, at least hook them up with me. I'll push them in the right direction if I can't provide it myself. Just because every time you tell me somebody that can't find the information, it helps us fix one more link. And when we launch the new website on Monday, the press release is going out tomorrow or something. It'll be out launched Monday. People then, when they can't find things in there, will help us fix one more link to one more information.
This also just a question. You gave the statistics.
It is, yes. It's this is a number that's been consistently found over decades of research now. Well, everything from threats and intimidation through physical, through psychological intimidation, that it covers the range of behaviors. Often you'll find that sometimes it will start off with threats and intimidation and it becomes physical after a while. Although, you know, many women will say that it's not necessarily a punch that's the worst thing that they experience. Many women will tell you that the emotional and psychological intimidation that they go through is every bit as difficult and painful as a physical assault.
I don't mean to make light out of it because obviously it's pretty serious, but that's just that you hear the statistics and mentally it's just sort of a...
It's huge and it's vastly underreported. The other sort of statistic that's important is that most people who are killed by their intimate other are usually people who haven't sought services. Generally, people who seek services tend to get through it in some way or other. But the most tragic cases often are ones where they've never sought help for it for whatever reasons. But you raise a good point because I talk about women who are predominantly the victims of domestic abuse, but men also are victims as well, and we provide services to them too.
And you keep saying that's too.
Absolutely, it's confidential. Mm-hmm. Always available. Yes. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for giving us the moment to speak tonight. Came down tonight to request, in previous years we haven't received the funding, not sure due to our past administration or what on with that, but came tonight to request the $7,967 for fiscal year 14 and hopefully years to come. Just go over a brief fiscal year 2012, Scottsville Rescue covered approximately, it was 1,129 calls, emergency calls, 844 of those were in Albemarle County, 75%, 226 of those were in Fluvanna County, which was equal to about 20%, 57 calls in Buckingham, 5%, and 2 calls in Nelson County, which equaled 1%. We cover the western end of Fluvanna County. It equals up to about 30 square miles. We cover from Route 6 from Scottsville on up to Kid's Store and down Route 620 and all the roads that branch off of that. And pretty frequently we're asked to cover, go past those lines. A couple weeks ago we were covered a call at the 11,000 block of West River Road, which is almost in Fork Union. We are staffed 24/7 during the day, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're staffed with staffing from Albemarle County Fire Rescue. And then nights, weekends, and holidays, we're staffed all by volunteers. And then second calls come in during the day or evenings. We are staffed by volunteers to cover those calls as well. To run our organization, it's about $166,000 operating budget yearly. $133,360 of that comes from Albemarle County, and the other roughly $33,000 of that's through fundraising on the rescue squad's part of that, and that was on fiscal year 2012 donations and things of that nature. past couple of years, our biggest fundraiser, the chili cook-off that we've had, we've been unable to have due to illness on the sponsoring company, James, that helped us with that due to a family illness, so we've had to make up that deficit. Scottsville Rescue, sort of some of the things that we have to fund, do fundraising for, any kind of medical upgrades and equipment. The most recent thing we had to find the money for was narrowband in compliance with the radio systems. We're currently on the 800 megahertz system in Albemarle County, and to be able to continue to communicate with the Fluvanna County, we had to upgrade about $4,500 worth of radios to be able to continue to talk to Fluvanna dispatch and have communication while on those calls in the county. I think that's pretty much it. We are here tonight to request the $7,967 for fiscal year 14 and continue to enable us to provide the highest level of service we can to as many of the citizens as we can in our area. Is there any questions?
Any questions from the Board of Supervisors? Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. Moving right on to the Youth Advisory Council.
I wanted to do a short presentation just to kind of orientate everybody. We have not done a presentation to the board in some time, and so what I'm presenting to you is just some basic information about youth advisory, what we do, kind of a little bit of our history. We meet to try to talk about youth issues in the county and how we might serve youth in either looking at what they're interested in seeing in the county. Sometimes we talk about youth issues in the county. We've had people speak at the meetings. This shows you some of the service to the county, but also I'm talking about some of what the people that participate in Youth Advisory Council, what they get out of it. We've also had people come and present ideas of different programs and things that they'd like to do with youth, and we've given them some advice and guidance on how to do that. This is just basic membership benefits. What I did want to talk about, though, is we have on the brochure in front of you, you'll see we have website. And what we do is we want to keep that website so that we can update it and have, and that directs youth and parents to different activities within the county. There's a cost associated with it. There are some activities such as the Celebrating Children event that we try to participate in and sometimes need funding for materials for the table and things like that that we might give to then hand out to the public. We had presence at the Old Farm Day event. Right now we're working with the library to do the board game Bonanza. The library right now has provided popcorn and lemonade for that event, but they also are short on budget, so we would like to do that for ourselves, just so we don't have to go out in the community and beg. But if we had a small budget, it would be great. And that's just sort of, we're asking for $360 just to cover those sort of basic needs that we feel we have.
Any questions from the board? What's
working? Working now is at the library. It's once a month. It's at 3:30, and it goes 3:30 to 6:30, and it's just we're trying to publicize it through the flu review and the school system to try to get kids to come after school to just sit around and play games and talk to each other, and it's sort of a social thing plus a board game night.
What day of the week?
It's Monday. I think the next one is the 11th. We have flyers and stuff for it.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
Moving on to the annual response.
Okay. I wanted to do this presentation. I've got some photos here because I really wasn't sure if everybody had seen these trailers, and I thought, again, just to kind of bring everybody up to par, this is our agricultural trailer, and obviously outside of it. These trailers are kept in the library parking lot at the far end, so not right behind the library, but at the other end. This is the inside of the agricultural trailer. We've got, we can set up temporary pens. We've got a generator. We've got electric fencing. We've got some things to put out grains and feed animals with. And so it's all, of course, sort of equipment for use with agricultural farm animals. This is the trailer, the newer trailer that we have that we got with a grant kind of basic, but I'm showing you the inside. This is the front. As you can see, these trailers are pretty well supplied. And this trailer came fully supplied. The agricultural trailer we've sort of supplied, added supplies to over time. This is the front of it. This is the rear of it. And amongst all of the things that are in the, particularly the pet trailer with companion animals, are these items that just are perishable. First aid kit supplies, there's band-aids that dry out, there's antiseptic creams that dry out and things like that. Some of the batteries go dead. These are disposable items that if you had an event, you were using the trailer, you would use some of these things up. Not all of them and not all of everything that you've got here, but some of these things would be used. So what I'm asking for is a modest $200 just to recover the cost of items that might be replaced, light bulbs, you know, just the kind of things that I've mentioned. Again, it's not that everything, when I do an inventory, that everything's going to need to be replaced. It's just those certain items that, you know, that are just going to wear out over time. Are there any questions?
Questions from the board?
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to Stream Watch.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. It's very uplifting to hear about all of these organizations working in the area. And I hope that you'll feel the same way about StreamWatch. First, I'd like to thank Mr. Nichols for including StreamWatch in the recommended budget for 2014. We had been dropped out of the 2013 budget, and we're very pleased that we've been recommended back in. Since my time is limited, I will not spend a lot of time reviewing our mission, but oh, we lost some pictures. I'd like to remind you, though, that the community is very fortunate to have a local stream monitoring organization that is as stable and long-term and high-quality as StreamWatch. We've been going strong with this mission for 10 years, and we are certainly made stronger by our crew of dedicated volunteers. These are about 130 local citizens who, excuse me, these are about 130 local citizens who give about 1,000 hours a year of their volunteer time, which equates to about $40,000 of labor costs that were being saved. I believe that most of you or all of you have seen our 2011 land use study, and I brought extra copies along with me for you. This was a very large study that we did to help us understand the connection, really understand and get at the details of the connection between stream health and how we use the land. And one of the really exciting outcomes of that study was a model that we now have, and this is a map that is within the report. It's a model that lets us predict stream health even in areas where we haven't monitored. So we can look at how much deforestation or how much development is in an area, and we can then predict what the stream health is going to be. This is one of the many tools that we hope to keep helping the local governments use in any way that you might be interested in. We know that about 70% of our streams in the Ravenna watershed are failing the state standard for aquatic health. And this is very alarming, but the last bullet gives us a little bit of hope. Most of those failing streams are right on the cusp, and so with wise management, we may be able to bring those back to health. So, quickly getting to the bottom line for you as you're making your decisions this year, what do you get in return for your contribution? We monitor 46 long-term monitoring sites right now around the whole Ravenna watershed, and 12 of them are in Fluvanna County. They are listed here. This means that more than a quarter of our sites are in Fluvanna. If you chose to fund us at our full request of $5,000, oh, so here's the pie chart in case you need to see that visually. There's your about 25% of the sites are in Fluvanna County. So if you choose to fund us for the request of $5,000 this year, you'll be contributing about 4% of our total budget. Whereas, meanwhile, as you saw, about a quarter of our sites are in your locality. So of our funding partners, yours is certainly the best return on investment. We have many activities planned for this coming year. I'm going to give you a handout before I walk away here with some of what we've been up to and what we're planning. We're going to keep expanding our long-term monitoring program to include 50 total sites. We're going to keep incorporating our new bacteria monitoring plan, and we're working with Ravana Conservation Society and the River Basin Commission to get the word out to local citizens about which waterways are safe for recreation at which times of year. And we're going to keep engaging and training local volunteers, keep building our volunteer base. We'll be releasing another Ravana-wide assessment of stream health, so that's going to help us know, have our streams gotten any better? Have they gotten worse? Are they holding steady? And that will come along with a printed report that you'll be seeing sometime within the next year. And last but not least, we're going to be welcoming a new executive director as I transition into a part-time program manager role, so I won't be leaving Streamwatch. But since I probably won't have the chance to speak to you directly again, I want to thank you for your long-time support and funding of Streamwatch, and please continue to show your support of us. Any questions?
What have you specifically done to improve in the last 7 years?
Well, the interesting thing about Streamwatch and what we think makes our mission so strong and our data such high quality is that we focus completely on the data and the information and the reports. So we collect the information about stream health in a neutral way, and we do no advocacy or finger pointing or policy recommendations. And the strength of that is that then we have 9 local partners that all have very different missions, like local government, state agencies. The Ravana Water and Sewer Authority has a very different mission than the Nature Conservancy, for example. But all of these local partners can use our data to then make decisions themselves. So we work very closely with each of you to help you use our data, but we're not actually affecting the change ourselves.
Basically, they can provide us to tell us if our streams are clean or not. Mm-hmm. And they tell us that our streams are clean.
And the Department of Environment. Oh, excuse me.
Basically, any development causes.
Well, I can't say any development because it would depend on the. It would depend on the development practices. We hope that one day our development practices will be such that they wouldn't impact a stream. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Uh-oh, we don't do finger pointing, but now other people can.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Moving on to Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I want to thank Rose for giving me the perfect segue into my presentation, because while they look at water quality, we do things to impact water quality. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. As I think all of you know, I'm Allison Sappington, District Manager of the Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm proud to say I've been here for 26 years, and the primary reason for that is because I really believe in what we do and the way we do it. And in that time, we've evolved tremendously to keep up with the changing needs of all of our localities. In general, we focus on non-point source pollution, which is the pollution that runs off of the land, rather than that which comes out of a pipe. We work with all landowners, urban, suburban, agricultural, to hopefully help them manage their lands better. We are non-regulatory, but we do help citizens and we help the locality meet other regulatory requirements in a very efficient, effective way. Just real briefly, I'm not going to read all of this. What is a soil and water conservation district? I think most of you are aware of what we are. The most important points here are that we're very local. We respond to local needs. And while we have resources from other areas, it's all local decision-making under a local board of directors. The other important point is the leveraging of local resources. We bring significant outside sources of funds and other resources into our localities from federal, state, and non-governmental sources. The Thomas Jefferson District in particular covers 5 localities. We have a board of directors of 12, one of whom is here. Tom Prattley is a representative from Fluvanna County, sitting in the back there. We have a staff of 7 full-time employees and various funding sources. This next slide, I want to highlight one of the programs for which we're most well-known, and it's the most significant program in Fluvanna County, and that's our agricultural cost-share program provided to farmers in the district. As many people have pointed out before me tonight, you get quite a bit more out of us than you put into us. In the Ag Cost Share program, in the last full fiscal year, Fluvanna County received 15% of the $1.2 million we distributed to farmers for farm conservation practices to help clean up the streams, while you contributed 3% to our budget. Of the locality contributions, the 5 localities, Fluvanna contributes 6% of the budget from the local governments. Local governments cover about one half of our budget, and Fluvanna covers it provides about 6% of that. In addition to the ag program, Fluvanna residents make up 17% of those who benefited from our educational program, and 22% of our easements are held in Fluvanna County. Just real quickly, some take-home points. These issues aren't going away, and I think you're well aware of some of the pollution reduction targets you need to meet through the Chesapeake Bay program. We provide all of the services we provide help you meet those requirements. There are some services that we do provide to other localities. Very recently, we partnered with some other districts and received $80,000 in grants that we're distributing for non-agricultural cost share programs. We were recently approved for a $50,000 grant to assist Louisa and Nelson develop their mandated stormwater management ordinance. Fluvanna must now do this using their own financial resources. I offered it up. I don't know why. But we did receive a grant. DCR was providing grants to those who were interested in getting assistance in doing that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. And then we also, in other localities, provide very very cost-effective support for the implementation of stormwater and erosion and sediment control programs. But it's getting harder and harder for us to justify the staff time that goes into Fluvanna County. We have our staff is working way more than the 40 hours a week that they should be working. And when they're competing needs. We've never turned down anybody in Fluvanna, and we don't want to have to. And all we are asking this year is to revert back to our 2008 funding level of $18,000 to just show a good faith effort in trying to keep from falling further behind the other localities. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Fluvanna County, that actually applied.
I'm sorry, but
the stormwater grant that we missed on. When do we intend to apply for that?
Oh, I believe it was last October, if I remember correctly. I think anybody in your county could have applied for the grant. Yeah, anybody could have applied for it, but whoever administers your erosion and sediment control ordinance, I think, would have gotten the direct information about the grant.
And how much did it typically cost for a locality now that we've missed the grant? I mean, what are we looking at in terms of price?
Well, we received $50,000 to assist two different localities.
$5,000?
On average, I think, in looking at the grants that did go around the state, I think most were in the $25,000 per county range to do that. And some counties used it to supplement their own staff time and actually did the work themselves, and other localities are contracting out just due to lack of staff time to get the work done.
Understood. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, moving along, Region 10.
Go forward.
Thank you for your service. I know this is a very thankless job that you have, so we're all thankful. I'm Charlie Fawcett. I'm the new director of the Region 10 office here in town. Right hand. Thank you. As you know, we have a brick-and-mortar building just up the hill from you here. We're open 8:30 to 5 on Mondays through Friday. We are also open some evenings for groups that we do. We have a 24-hour emergency services available for our residents here who are in crisis. There's some contact information if you need it. Here's our staff. I'm the director and also a clinician. We have an office manager, two other clinicians, providing counseling services, two case managers, a 50% program manager for the in-school program. We have nine staff now that work in the schools, providing behavioral treatment for, not educational, but behavioral concerns that are happening in the schools. Just if you're curious on how the continuum of care works and then where we fit in, you can see on the left is our residential type situations for chronic and acute crises. And then there's the Wellness Recovery Center. I used to manage that for the last 2.5 years before I came here. Then we have what the Fluvanna offers here in town is the outpatient services, the case management services, and the mental health support services. And then we have the PAC team in town, which is kind of a hospital without walls. And they do help residents in here, but we just don't manage that from here. For children, hopefully they can get some care from their school guidance counselors. If not, then we step in and help with outpatient therapy, as well as other private providers here in town, and then case management services, and also then the therapeutic day treatment we provide in the schools. And if that's failing, the next step is intensive in-home therapy, and then off to the right you can see residential treatment from acute to more long-term settings. And for substance abuse, similar type of thing. Hopefully people get support from Alcoholics Anonymous and NA. There's usually groups meeting almost every night here in town. And then we have us and also the Virginia Alcohol and Substance Abuse Program, ASAP, if you're familiar with that. We work with them. And then in town, we offer an intensive outpatient for substance abuse. And then you can see that some people might require a detoxification, and then there's residential treatment options after that. Here's the numbers of people that have helped during the last fiscal year, which is from July 1st to June 30th. So as far as our budget goes, about 2% we get from the state, another about 9% we get from you all, so thank you for that. The rest of it is actually self-funded through either private pay, through Medicaid, or private insurance. So the reason your money is so important is because it helps us to have those people at the lower socioeconomic group. We put them on a sliding scale, and without your money, we'd have a very difficult time being able to provide services for them. So thank you. Any questions?
Any questions?
You are very good help for children in school, and only serve those children who have had
K. That's correct. All right. Thank you.
We're good. Thank you very much. Move on to Sexual Assault Resource Agencies.
Hello. My name's Becky Waybright. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I've only been at SARA, the Sexual Assault Resource Agency. I just started at the end of October, so I know shortly after I started, I had to put the requests into you guys, so I appreciate the opportunity to come out and meet you in person. I just kept our funding request at level funding. I knew that there were a lot of things going on in Fluvanna County, and I felt like that was the best option to do for our request. I'm going to go over just briefly over SARA's services and then talk a little bit about some of the cost benefits. I'm hoping most of y'all are familiar with that. We offer a 24-hour hotline, which includes emergency room accompaniment, and we have staff that are on call every day, every night, in case we get phone calls. We offer supportive services of support, advocacy, counseling, and we also have a licensed therapist on staff. We have two staff that are bilingual and can speak Spanish, our therapist, and then our child advocate can also speak Spanish. We do outreach and training to the community, and we also do training with allied professionals. And we do prevention education to schools. We've been doing work in the elementary schools, the middle schools, and the high schools. We've been looking at primary prevention, really looking a lot at how to talk to a group of students and potentially give people ways to reduce their risk, but also ways that potential perpetrators may learn information that may keep them from committing a sexual violence. We also work a lot with bystander intervention, talking a lot to kids about how they might stand up to sexual harassment, stand up to bullying, and hopefully from there lessen the chances of something becoming to a situation with sexual violence. All of our services are free, so we very much rely on grant funding and on fundraising to support our services. In the last fiscal year, 2012, we served at least 21 residents from Fluvanna County. We don't always know if we get hotline calls. We're not always sure where people are from, so we can't always identify that. With sexual violence, people often talk about the emotional costs that happen to the person, but there actually are real physical costs. According to the National Alliance to End Sexual Assault, the support victims receive from a rape crisis center immediately following an assault not only give them referrals to that agency, but it also what these studies have shown is that the absence of these services have been linked to increased health problems, depression, self-blame, guilt, and a reluctance to seek further services. So because we exist, we're able to help somebody who is a victim of a sexual violence to be able to get back more quickly to their former life, back to work, back to being a productive citizen of the community. And the same report also found that victims with advocates were 59% more likely to have police reports taken than victims with no advocate present. So certainly the presence of an advocate with a sexual assault survivor can make a significant difference. And I thank you again.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'll forgive you, because you're going to have to forgive me in a minute or something.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm Judy Smith with Jefferson Area CHIP, and you all have been funding us for years, and we're very appreciative of your support. We are a home visiting program for low-income children and families in this community, and we have three major objectives, and that is to help families access health care, to use health care appropriately, to help parents understand what it takes to raise a healthy child, to help with parenting experiences, and to connect families with community resources. But I'm not going to use my PowerPoint tonight. Instead, I'm going to ask you to reach in your pockets and see if you have a dollar bill, and if you will, if you'll pull out that dollar for me.
I'm just a moment.
think they can hear me.
No, yes,
you want to hold the mic? Steve doesn't trust me. What I want you to hear is, for every dollar that you give to a program like SHIFT, guess what you get back to your county? You get $17 on every dollar that you can do.
This looks like Monopoly money.
Oh, yeah. It's worth a lot.
Wow, look at that.
You get $17 back. So you come and say, what does that mean?
$10
No, but right now it's worth a lot. What does that exactly mean for you? Well, if you remember, first of all, that we work with low-income children and families. And we know, and it's in the brochure that I passed around, that if you have a healthy pregnancy, you're more likely to have a healthy child. We know that if children get regular well child care and get their immunizations, they save lots of costs in hospitalization and Medicaid expenses. We know that parents, as they become better parent, have better parenting skills. We also know that kids stay away from social services. We help families use community resources so that they are more productive. We help them utilize so that we decrease the likelihood that they will show up in the court system. And we know by getting children early preschool experiences that we save tons of money. Do you know that the average cost for retaining a child in kindergarten and first grade is somewhere between $7,000 and $10,000? And in some places, they say it's even higher than that. Do you know that for a child, this is making a lot of noise, is it bothering you? Okay. And for children who are retained in first or second grade, they're more likely to drop out of school. And do you know that children who do not finish high school earn approximately $10,000 less than their counterparts who finish high school? And those are huge numbers. One of the things I do want to point out that has been said tonight over and over again is the importance of working with community agencies in our community. People so often feel that there's duplication between services. CHIP works with practically every organization who's talked tonight that delivers human services. For instance, the Region 10 people, we refer for mental health services and make sure families know how to use it. We work with social services with families who have had a complaint to help them learn how they can use the system better and to help them make better use of their time as a parent. We work with preschool programs and Head Start to make sure that families know how to enroll in those programs and that they take advantage of it. So we are so appreciative of all the support you've given us. We are all about making sure that kids are healthy and are able to enter school ready to learn. I love the quote earlier that says that you judge a community by how it treats its vulnerable population. I also love the quote that says, our lives begin to end the day we remain silent about things that matter. And it matters what we do with young children in our community. 6% of your population in Fluvanna County are children under the age of 6. But what you really should remember is that they're 100% of your future. So thank you again for all you've done for us, and we appreciate the support you give us. And Steve will give you back your money. Maybe.
And I'll click. $5 donation to CHIP. Anybody have any objection?
Do we have the slideshow?
We didn't.
All right. Well, fortunately, everybody has a copy of it, so we'll just do it that way. My name is Scott Valentine. I'm here tonight representing the Fluvanna County Chamber of Commerce. Just want to do some chamber highlights. No? Okay. Chamber has a proven record of service to the county, its businesses, and its citizens. The Chamber office is a gateway to our community. If you've ever spent any time at the Chamber office, you'll know that we receive several phone calls a day, as well as walk-in traffic from new people to the county, asking about the county, asking about opportunities in the county, places to live, and quite often to receive something like the publication I gave you. The Chamber is invested in the county's success through economic development, and a way that we've shown that in the last couple of years would be through our Favana County Wine Festivals, as well as last year's Barbecue Band and Brew, which, by the way, this year's will be June 22nd. Hope to see y'all there. The Chamber is proactive in business retention, assistance to businesses, recruitment of business to the county. This year, we submitted a budget request of $6,000. And the reason for that budget request would be to offset the cost of the Fluvanna County Guide. We print 5,000 of these guides and get them out to residents of Fluvanna County. If you look through the guide, and I kind of intentionally put your PowerPoint presentation in to the page where your names are, several pages of the guide is dedicated to the county administrative offices, county departments as a resource. If you take the 6 full pages that we devote to you, that would be an advertising value in our guide of about $3,000. We also use other pages to support vital community organizations and services such as churches and nonprofits, most of whom are not members of the Chamber. The guide provides vital information to Fluvanna's current and prospective citizens in business, and the guide is used and distributed by the county's administrative offices throughout the year. The Chamber is committed to the future of Fluvanna County, its businesses and citizens, through a sustainable economic development. Working daily to partner with county administration, the Board of Supervisors, the EDA, EDC, to achieve mutual goals of the county. Deciding, dedicated to making a difference to the county, quality of life in Fluvanna County. Basically, everybody knows what the Chamber is, who we are. In the past, last year, and what was submitted in this year's budget by county administration was $1,750. It is very expensive to put this guide out, and that's one reason I wanted y'all to have it is a high quality document. When this is delivered to people's houses, when they pick it up at the banks or the county office, etc., this is something that stays in most homes for a year as a reference tool. And again, that's why we do have all the information, not only amongst our member businesses, but also county offices, county services, etc. And all we're asking is for a little bit extra money to help defer the cost and making this publication so we can keep it at the high level of printing and layout that we currently have. Any questions?
We're all engrossed.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I personally didn't do it, but I'll take thank you anyway. And also, this is much better than 10:30 time I signed up for, so thanks for keeping us going.
Very good.
Moving right along to the Fluvanna Arts Council.
This is the entertainment segment of the evening. I'm Adele Schaefer, president of the Fluvanna County Arts Council. What you have in your hand is the handbill of all of the productions that are scheduled for 2012-2013, and we've not finished. We won't be finished until May. In there you'll see productions that are free, that cost us anywhere from $600 to $4,700 for the entertainment. That is why we come to you each year. The cost, however, I do want to make note, because we're very proud of it this year. This very professional handbill cost us, we got 6,000 copies. We delivered it to every house at Lake Monticello. There were other areas that it was delivered to, and everyone that has attended any one of our performances has received one, and it cost us $8. That's all our money goes towards providing good entertainment for the residents of Fluvanna County. And I do want to bring to your attention that we're still looking for applicants for Fluvanna's Got Talent. The deadline is the 4th of March, so if you know anybody, no finger pointing, but if you know of anybody, that's what I thought. The Fluvanna Arts Council is requesting the Board of Supervisors for $10,000. Half of which will be offset by a local government challenge grant from the Virginia Commission of the Arts for $5,000. So in essence, it's really $5,000. The application for the grant is currently being reviewed by Pat Groot, the grants administrator, and the Fluvanna Arts Council. Excuse me. And the Fluvanna Arts Council is entertaining a positive response from the board. Have any questions?
And any positive responses from the board?
All positive. Let me ask you, that grant, $5,000.
Yes, sir.
I think that was gotten from Earl Dickerson earlier, years gone by. Is that pretty well established?
Yes. Yes, it's been...
as long as I remember.
Yeah, I've only been associated with the council for about a year and a half, and but as far as I know, it goes back a long time. Great. Thank you.
Pima Valley Community College.
Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight, and thank you also for including funding in the administration's recommendation. We do appreciate that. Budget request summarizes, PVCC uses local funding to support program expenses that are not supported by state funds. These include, among other expenses, site expenses, student support activities, informational services, and extended learning initiatives designed to take instruction directly to the residents of the college's service region. In that regard, I'd like to kind of put a focus on the dual enrollment program that we have. In the fall of 2012, we had 61 students from Fluvanna that were active in our dual enrollment program, and in spring of 12, we had 54, fall of 11, 49. So we are progressively increasing our activity in terms of dual enrollment. We're estimating for 12, 13, this past fall and the spring, about 875 students of our enrollment at PVCC are coming from this county. So Fluvanna is well represented at PVCC, and we certainly appreciate the support that you provide to us.
Questions?
Thank you.
Private.
Yeah, that's someone, probably John Donnelly.
Okay, yes. There we go. Thank you. And moving right along to the leadership program.
Okay.
Loving listening.
I know. Last time I looked, I'm not Easton Loving. I'm Kathy Swenson Miller, and I'm not certain where my colleagues are, so I'm really glad we have a PowerPoint, because I was not planning on doing this. Okay, the Fluvanna Leadership Program, I think all of you are aware of it. It's about a 7-month program throughout the year where we solicit Flavanna citizens to participate in learning how Flavanna County operates. And we look to get participants to eventually participate in county boards and commissions, to get them involved in volunteering in the county, and to basically get more involved in all aspects of the community. The program originated or was inspired by the Raritan Club, and it has been supported financially in the past by the Board of Supervisors, Raritan's Chamber of Commerce, and the Cooperative Extension Service, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, yes. The program's been in existence for 10 years, and we've had 10 years of participants. It's run 100% by volunteers. We have an evolving group of previous participants who are on the steering committee, and this is the current steering committee. The program has sessions that take place over about 7 months, and it includes the participants learning about the history of the county, learning about government. There's some familiar faces. They meet the constitutional officers of the county. They see how become familiar with other government officials at the state level. They work on projects, and this particular year there are three areas of focus that the group has decided to work on. Economic development needs, which is one that seems to come up every year, fire and rescue, and better communication on school matters. So how effective has the program been? We're in the 10th year, so the first 9 classes, we've had 194 folks who have gone through the program, who have assumed 144 positions in the county. We have graduates who have been involved in 29 different county organizations, and currently hold 69 county positions. Two of our current school board members have gone through the program. Three members of the Planning Commission, which I know has now been abolished, but not the Planning Commission. That's correct. Okay, two of our supervisors. Sorry, Moselle. Okay, thank you. I think we took that at one of the Board of Supervisor meetings.
That funny request just got cut in half.
Okay, our new county administrator went through the program last year. Okay. So this gives you some data about what our graduates have done. We're proud of the program. Well, we're asking you for some money. Okay. Okay. Well, last year, because I think of the turmoil that was going on in the county, we were not alerted to come to the board, and so we do ask for a $25 enrollment fee from each participant, and that covers, our expenses. Full-day bus tour of the county, if you haven't done that, we would love to have you participate. Actually, it's a 6-hour tour of the county, which is pretty amazing in terms of what's what's here. Our graduation dinner, handout materials, refreshments, and scholarships for folks who can't afford the enrollment fee. So we're asking for $1,000, and we will continue to solicit money from the Chamber of Commerce, Ruritans, and other folks as well. Okay, thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, that concludes our presentations for the evening. Is there anybody else we have from the organization that would like to address the board? Have not? Okay, so we have no items of unfinished business. No items. Now, are there any items of new business before the board? Okay, the county minister would like us to go ahead and go into closed session to discuss. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Allenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passed 5-0. We're in closed session.
Mr. Chairman, I move the vote meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to meet again in open session. Take the vote to be adjourned.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Roll call vote, Mr. Chester?
Yay.
Mr. Weaver?
Yes.
Mrs. Booker?
Yes.
Mr. Albrock?
Yes.
Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Mr. Weaver?
Be it resolved to the best of my knowledge on the public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 Code of Virginia of Virginia 1958 amended, and only such public business matters that were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting is convened, or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
A second? Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Any topics that we want to discuss in the work session March 6th or 6th or 7th?
Well, I think we need to discuss the budget. I guess there's a lot of stuff in that budget. You can go over and tweak.
From my perspective, it would be really nice if you had some target areas that you want to follow up on. If you tell me any of those, if you email to say any of those you want to look at specifically, or on that night, if you go through, we can certainly change anything on the fly. You'll be able to see it. But if there's stuff you want us to drill down on, that may be a good time, too.
I think that might be a good hour to go through nonprofits.
But there, we need some other stuff, too.
No, I know, but I mean, that can't be much in an hour, you know how that goes.
Yeah, I still don't think you would go through the entire budget yet until you have what the school's model presentation is.
How much money did you find was left over from last year's fiscal year? You know, we talked about that, well, and you weren't sure.
I think Mark was putting together a presentation for you, so you see that, so you'll know exactly where the money went. But I want to say that there was $800,000, and that what we identified before, that was in all the different pots all over from various things.
It might be useful to review the General Assembly budget.
Yeah, okay.
What about teachers?
Pull out the RSPC.
They say they're getting 2% raise from the state.
It's money that goes into that budget, and it's essentially a one-for-one match, a 1% and 1% match.
And we're
not 2% plus 2, it's 1% from them.
And 1% of the bonds money.
So then they already have 1% in, so they're asking for it.
Well, they're asking for it in the 2.1 extra that they need above the 12.2 baseline. It's included in there. But depends on how deep you go down on that 2.1 ask. Because remember, 12.2 and above that,
right.
2.1 worth of stuff. And I was wrong when I told you it was consolidated, it said 1.8. It wasn't. There was a math error in one of the sheets. So it's 1.8 plus the CTGD.
That's really 14.3.
Right.
Yes, when you combine the two together. So there's 2.1 in the mask, and 12.2, which is what they have as a baseline. It just depends on how far you go down that 2.1 list and which stuff you'll pick up.
Okay. And for me, the thing...
The short story is done, that they're getting 2%, but we're paying 1.
Yeah.
And the state's paying 1. There's another...
But that does not apply to every staff member, so it depends on how much pay rates you apply.
The thing with me is, like Sean said, we really can't, we don't know where the school is, that we not, I don't know how we organize so we are not jumping all over the place, and then we kind of miss certain things. We have a structure.
We'll straighten out
a little bit. We need to go right down. That's the best way to go right down.
Start with the supervisor's budget.
Yes,
We did that last
year. Work out and down. No, we did. We jumped up. I think in my opinion.
So St. Patrick, you didn't say that. That was the thing we got done.
Yeah.
This year, I think it's a lot easier.
March 13th and March 27th are your kind of open dates to do that kind of stuff that we set up for the board show. But at least after March 6th, you will have heard everyone except Mr. Evergreen is going to be on the 20th schedule for a 5-minute presentation because he's out of the country, so it wasn't here tonight. So one nonprofit. And the schools. And the schools will present on the 20th.
Same day. But
I don't think we're going to have the troubles we had last year with a big base.
Yeah, no, I think that the problem is the school's number is for you to play, and I don't mean that in a flip way, I mean for you to munch and crunch and see what's there, you either got to get a lot of work done ahead of time before the 20th,
right.
So you know what you might have available to use the schools if you want to, or
do it all
the schools have to move up sooner.
You see, we're going to be
setting a moment this year.
If we wait too long and wait for the school, then we're going to set our advertised rate that same night. So it's like throwing darts at a dartboard. We're only going to have a guessable guess.
I would suggest you find every bit of money that you don't intend to fund,
before the 20th.
You want to fund, and identify those for us, for the staff, so we can change it on there on the fly, so you'll know anything that may affect the tax rate because it's extras money that you're not going to fund for those programs, everything except school, or anything you want to put in there, so that we have an opportunity to tell you where there's potential money, but then you also will know before the 20th what you potentially have available for schools if you have an intention to
go. If we have 500 grand, we have 300 grand, we have negative money. Because I know Joe's got some stuff. And we got 150,000. Steve, the 150,000
for the ambulance.
For what? For the ambulance.
For not
the, that's not in their budget, right?
Yeah.
No, it would be a plus up. You'd have to add money.
So that's 150K there. And
what was that again, Steve? I didn't get it. 151?
Lake Monticello ambulance.
We got the ambulance.
We've heard of your ambulance. You see, they're not CIP. So they get
jammed.
Whereas
we
come
to the
CIP.
Well, I know you get two conversations going on at the same time.
I have my thoughts on the things that I see as I've gone through here. And I'm going to have those on a piece of paper so as we go through here, I can throw out what my thoughts are. And that's what I'm saying. But if I have a thought that I feel that I need some guidance from you and your staff, I can say, what's the possibility? Is this even thinkable? Should I just put a red mark through it and keep on the
document? Yeah, we'll be glad to advise you or give you information and tell you where it's possible. It's just that when it goes to you, it's going to go to all of us.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
I can tell you, though, there is no unless you know something you're not going to fund that I haven't heard yet. There is no magic big pot of money of $500,000 sitting around anyplace. So if a person's saying the $150K for the ambulance,
right.
And somebody wants somebody wants to put some over here, and then we want to make sure this stipend gets paid to that thing. There is no magic pot of money with the existing tax rate.
You see, the only money that I saw was in nonprofits where there's a $40,000 increase over last year.
For Java?
No, for total. I was just talking total. Right. You're right. You're not going to find $100,000 in there.
Well,
who are we going to find $150,000 you're talking about?
It's really a CIP item, but it's not.
Yeah, the only reason it's not a CIP is because they own it. We're just giving them the cash to buy.
We can't afford to.
We haven't discussed it.
We do need to discuss all that.
That's another issue.
And the schools don't come, and the parents don't come to us with an invitation to
$300,000
and another $100,000.
$575 with the $3 million follow-up with the $200,000 to $300,000 in the subsequent year is to build a water system that's on crossroads connected to DOC. Essentially,
it also frankly scares me to death too, because we've got how many millions of dollars requests in the CIP, and there's the only way of funding that is going to be through the cash reserve. Well, and we don't not exactly have too many funding mechanisms to replace that. That's exactly my
point about water stuff. If you don't have the wherewithal to approve a water plan, then why are we spending time doing negotiations and stuff? Because there's a $4.5 or $5 million wedge over 3 years in the CIP for putting pipes in the ground. You're not going to get any cheaper by doing it through a PPA or anything else. I mean, even the monthly cost, even the annual cost on loan rates are not going to be anywhere near what they'd be if you financed it yourself. I'm not suggesting that you have to approve anything over there. I'm just suggesting that if you're not willing to approve even that kind of dollar, then why am I even looking at anything else?
Because there's all this pressure on to go ahead and throw towards public education. And you start every single time, towards public education, it's one more time you don't have for economic development. I mean, we've been talking it to death, and that's not saying that it's not important to do public education, but it's a cart horse thing.
I'm advocating for the water system.
Yeah, you can't do
it. I'm just here to push back on the cost of what it's going to be. It's going to cost some amount of money, and you're either going to have to debt finance it, or you're going to have to take it out of cash reserves. You don't have enough cash reserves in every year to do that. Maybe do some debt financing. Maybe a tax increase next year helps pay for part of that. I don't know. I'm just suggesting that you either got to commit to making that a priority and find some way to fund that, or just stop it over
there. I agree with this. The original idea behind this whole PPA thing, and it's not that way now, the whole premise has changed, was that the DOC would be a purchaser, and that's what was part of it.
Right.
And Louisa would be a purchaser, which would have taken care of any cost for at least 3 or 4 years. Now that's all changed, so since that's changed, now we have a different environment to deal with. And we know the whole idea was that we didn't have the capital money to put forth, and so that's why we went to Aqua Virginia and says, here's our situation, can you help us out? And they did. They gave us a plan, which we're reviewing, but that whole premise has changed because the two customers are not there anymore.
That's not in the ROI. That development only really got started, rocking up.
That was from the zero start in
2008.
You all heard that the economy is going to be like this for the next 4, 5, 6 years.
This is true.
This is from 2006, 2007.
So it's only going to be local areas where, I mean, you're obviously some sort of economic activity occurs over that course.
I guess,
you're going to see it at Zion's Crossroads. It's the only undeveloped four-lane intersection between Charlottesville and Richmond. Yeah, I mean, it's happening there.
And of course, there is.
There's just no...
There's really no mixed development going on in Richmond.
Which should tell you something.
Was that?